It's Monday, June 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the world braces for more fallout after Britain's vote to leave the European Union.
We're effectively being taken out of the EU against our will, and very much a sense that more than ever, Scotland is a separate country.
Brexit raises the question again for independence in Scotland. Also ahead, how does Brexit affect who will be the next U.S. president? And controversy over an Emmy Award won three decades ago. It's all on today's International Edition. After shocks from Britain's stunning decision to leave the European Union continued Sunday, as the country's politics and its relations with the world plunged into deeper uncertainty. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, already in Europe, added previously unannounced stops in London and Brussels to his trip at the last minute. Kerry plans to meet with British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond and other officials as part of a process of maintaining ties with Washington's top ally in a new era when Britain is less engaged with Europe. U.S. President Barack Obama had urged Britain not to quit Europe. The Obama administration has reacted with concern to the Brexit referendum and what it will mean for relations with London and the EU. Prime Minister David Cameron announced his resignation Friday and has clearly indicated he will not be the one to negotiate the formalities of Britain's separation from the EU. VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez joins us following a weekend without financial markets open, but busy nonetheless as we begin a likely week filled with more turmoil.
Well, the aftershocks continue to be felt through the weekend, a real political turmoil that we're witnessing here. The Labour Party has plunged into disarray, and that's the best way to describe it, with a clear revolt going on. Members of the Labour Party accusing their leader, Jeremy Corbyn, of not doing enough to galvanize support for Brexit, so now they're calling for him to step down. Now, on the side of the Conservatives, the ruling party, well, there's still big questions as to who will succeed David Cameron as prime minister. He, of course, announced that he is stepping down in the wake of this, what has turned out for him to be a Brexit disaster. He, like many other people in Britain, were not expecting the referendum to be won by those who support leaving the European Union. The Parliament is due to meet on Monday again for the first time since that vote. Lots of shockwaves. And so one of the things that we're seeing is a number of movements to try to counteract that, to try to reverse the referendum result.
There were economic shockwaves around the world from the results of this referendum. How is that affecting just the ordinary person on the ground at this moment in London, or is it having any immediate effect?
Well, there is a great deal of uncertainty, particularly when you're talking about people who work in international business, people with investments on the continent. One of the first consequences we saw on Friday was the British pound plunging to its lowest level in three decades. And, of course, the markets as well just going into terrible turmoil, some of them recovering. For example, the FTSE 100 plunged during the day, but then ended up losing only 3% at the end of the day. All of this is certainly consistent with what economists were predicting. They were predicting that there would be turbulence if Britain voted to leave. Many investors taking measures to protect themselves. The economists saying that since they were expecting this, they are looking to see a correction in the coming days. But they said it will be days before we see an end to the market turbulence that's been happening. That said, that does not clear the uncertainty that reigns, and more market turbulence expected in the next few days before things level out.
Luis Ramirez, VOA's correspondent in London. Luis, thank you so much for taking some time out to join us.
Thank you, Jim.
One of the interesting and perhaps more difficult aspects of the Brexit referendum outcome is the growing rift inside the United Kingdom. International Edition will get a sense of what people in Scotland think in just a few minutes. Right now, it's time to check out how the online community reacted to the EU referendum over the weekend. Our social media guru, of course, is none other than G. Abby Lee. She's right here in Studio 22 to tell us what people are saying about the so-called Brexit. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. It looks like people in the UK are asking about the aftermath of the EU referendum results, and I mean that quite literally. The number of people asking what happens if we leave the EU skyrocketed 2 hours after the polls closed on Google search, and that's around midnight Britain time. And I learned this through Twitter.
I see. And from what account?
From Google Trends at Google Trends, and it's an account run by Google's News Lab that specializes in data and visualization. It tweeted, the number of people asking the question jumped 250% around midnight on Friday. And one of the most popular replies to that tweet reads, surprised all these people didn't bother to research it before voting. Clearly, we have lots of blind hashtag EUREF voters.
Well, moving on to its political impact, did the outgoing prime minister tweet about his departure?
He didn't, but he did thank everyone who voted to stay in. He tweeted, thank you everyone who voted to keep Britain stronger, safer and better off in Europe, and thousands of At Stronger In campaigners around the UK. More than 14,000 people liked that tweet. But another politician took it upon himself to tweet about Cameron's departure, and that's none other than Nigel Farage, who is a leader of the UK Independence Party. He tweeted, it's right that David Cameron is gone, not a bad man, just on the wrong side of the argument. Jim, you know what? This is what the millennials would call throwing a shade.
Yes.
And another news that's trending on social media this weekend is the Al-Shabaab attack in Somalia. Now, for more on that news, I strongly recommend our listeners follow Harun Maraf, who is our conflicts reporter, and his handle is at Harun Maraf. That's HARUNMARUF. And that's all for me today. Jim?
All right. Great tip there. And thanks for the wrap-up, G. You may tweet your questions and comments to our Twitter stream. That's at @VOA_IE. Tag G and myself on those tweets while you're there. Our handles are at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top regional stories in Asia that are trending at this hour, Afghan forces kill 135 militants linked to Islamic State. Taliban vows retaliation as United States resumes Afghan airstrikes. Former U.S. envoys urge President Obama to delay troop cuts in Afghanistan. Cambodian Americans lobby for human rights resolution. And a U.S. legislator says China's organ harvest is Nazi-like. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. While Britain as a whole chose last week to leave the European Union, Scotland voted overwhelmingly to stay. Journalist Lorraine Mallinder joins us from Edinburgh, where there is once again some serious talk of Scottish independence.
What we're really seeing now, if you go back to 2014, the last independence referendum, and 45% voted for independence. Now we have a situation where the Scotland has been voted effectively by the English vote. Massive, you know, much more voters in England. In England, we've got 37 million voters. In Scotland, you're talking about 4 million. So we're effectively being taken out of the EU against our will. And very much a sense that more than ever, Scotland is a separate country. On the night of the referendum, on Thursday night there, you could see it on the map. I mean, Scotland, yellow, voted, every council area voted Remain, set against the English map, almost, I mean, apart from London and certain isolated areas, leave. And it was very, very stark, just seeing that kind of image of the map with the separate colours, you know, Scotland in yellow and almost all of England in blue. Yes, I think that definitely that sense of a different country.
With such an overwhelming Remain vote in Scotland, the prospects for a new Prime Minister can't sit very well with people there.
Oh, my God, I think that would be the worst thing for Scots. I mean, even I think Scots would certainly react. Boris Johnson, who was one of the main figures in the Leave campaign, a conservative Eurosceptic who has effectively led Britain out of the EU. I think if Boris Johnson were to become the next Prime Minister, certainly Scots would probably have more of a problem with that than they do even with Brexit. So there'd be a double whammy there.
Going into this week, what is the mood in Edinburgh? Are they calling for more referendums now? What are they trying to do to react to this situation?
Well, one thing we saw very quickly after the Brexit result was announced on Friday, we saw Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish First Minister, immediately coming out with what seemed to be a very well-thought-out plan of action for going to Brussels, for talking with the different Brussels institutions and talking to other European leaders about what Scotland's options might be. Now, on the ground, when it comes to just people on the street, certainly what I've been hearing anecdotally is that a lot of people who did vote no in the last referendum in 2014 to independence are now rethinking and, you know, possibly, yes, they could change their minds. And one newspaper came out yesterday with a new poll showing that 59% of Scots would vote independence now. So although the polls and how much you can take notice of the polls now, they didn't call the Brexit vote. So but there is a sense, though, that a lot of people who voted no last time would perhaps vote yes this time. I mean, it's such a massive thing being voted out of the EU.
Lorraine Mallinder, a journalist in Edinburgh, Scotland, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your evening to speak with us.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
Well, here in the United States, strong comparisons to the Brexit outcome and U.S. presidential politics are being made. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us with more.
Jim, there are undoubtedly echoes and shockwaves stemming from Britain's vote to leave the European Union. And there is some thought that those shockwaves could reach the U.S. presidential election. Interestingly, on the day when the world was absorbing this news, Republican presumptive nominee Donald Trump was in Scotland for the golf course that bears his name, this resort. And he had a lot to say about it. And his point was that the passions that led a majority of voters in Britain to opt to leave the European Union are very much like some of the currents that he believes propelled him to the nomination that he will be claiming just next month.
Scotland did not vote overwhelmingly, at least in that area, to leave, while folks to the south did want to leave. And here's Donald Trump in Scotland saying how great it is.
I don't know if he purposefully, you know, timed the trip to be there at that moment. But truly, the timing couldn't have been any better or any worse, depending on your perspective. Here's the thing, though. There is this idea in the United States that has been shattered, in essence, or if not shattered, it has been called into question. And that is the assumption that polls can be believed, and that when you have a majority of people telling pollsters that they intend to vote one way and then they vote the other way, as appears to be the case in Britain, what does that mean for the United States? Are there a group of people who secretly like Donald Trump and believe his message, but who are telling pollsters that, no, they dislike him and they don't like his message? If, in fact, something similar to what occurred in Britain were to be manifesting itself in the United States, then maybe all the polls that we're seeing showing that Donald Trump has fallen far behind Hillary Clinton, maybe those polls aren't to be believed. And it adds a note of anxiety and a note of uncertainty to the U.S. presidential contest.
Brexit did create immediate financial shockwaves around the world. The U.S. markets were not immune. The Dow Jones Industrial dropping more than 600 100 points in one day. A couple trillion dollars around the world just evaporated after Brexit. And this is a concern, obviously, for voters here in the United States.
Here's another possible point of anxiety for Democrats as they look ahead. The United States economy has been in a sustained recovery almost since the beginning of Obama's term as president, going on 8 years now, but it's been a weak one. Typically, with an economy like the United States, it is so big that it can absorb any given shock. But there have been instances with oil shocks, the price of gasoline suddenly spiking in decades past, where it's really thrown the U.S. economy into a funk. And if this were to occur as Americans are preparing to go to the polls, if the economy slows down, if it in fact starts to shrink, or if a lot of people are suddenly thrown out of work, typically, the party that's in power, the party occupying the White House, gets the blame. Now, if Donald Trump is tying himself to Brexit and Brexit is identified as the cause, will he be blamed? Will President Obama be blamed? And by extension, Hillary Clinton? Mm-hmm. We don't know. But it throws another big question mark into an election season that has been truly volatile to date and shows no sign of being less volatile as we go forward.
Well, from our standpoint here, we don't like too much change because we like speaking with Michael Bowman every week about what is happening in politics and the world. Our Senate correspondent, Michael, thanks for stopping by.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
With so much uncertainty around Brexit continuing, you can follow all of the up-to-date stories on our website, voanews.com, and be sure to follow our Twitter stream. It's at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, why don't you stop by our Facebook page and like us there, VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Television Academy, which awards the Emmy Awards for television excellence, is suing to stop Whitney Houston's heirs from selling her Emmy statuette because they say the sale would tarnish the award. Houston won the Emmy for Outstanding Individual Performance in a Variety or Musical in 1986 for the song Saving All My Love for You, which she performed at the Grammys. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the controversy, which could stop the auction.
Well, it's a televised broadcast for which Whitney won an Emmy. And so the actual Emmy Award, the statue, along with some other things like her passport, her wedding dress, and other personal items are being put up for auction. Now, the Television Academy is suing Houston's estate. They want to stop the sale of the statue. And they're making two points. One, that by selling it at auction, it sort of takes away from the prestige of the award. And the second point is that the Television Academy lends these statues to the people who win them. So you win the award, but the statue itself, you don't, as an award winner, technically own. Now, all of these items are going up for auction on Friday, and the Television Academy is asking the courts to not only stop the sale, but while the case is in court, to actually take the statue back so that it doesn't accidentally, and I'm using air quotes here, accidentally get sold while everything is in deliberation.
So it doesn't get lost in delivery or something, right?
Or
we don't
something
know what
like
happened
that.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, see, now, the Emmys, I know that for the Oscars, you get the statue that they give you at the ceremony, but then you get like a mini version to take home. Is that
right.
The same thing with the Emmys? And this is the full-size thing they're trying to sell.
This
right?
is the full-size Emmy, and it depends on the category. So if you win an Emmy for one of the televised categories, you get to take home your statue that day. But my assumption is that this was not one of the televised categories. It was sort of like a televised live performance. So I'm assuming that this is a full-size Emmy that was sent to her home sometime after she actually was presented with the honor.
Now, why are they selling this? Why are do they need money? I wouldn't think Whitney Houston's estate would need money.
Well, that is unclear. And I looked through a number of different stories to see if there was a reason, if the estate was, in fact, in financial trouble. And it doesn't appear to be. So it may just be that, like is usually the case with a lot of these estates, is that there are things worth money that they don't necessarily need or don't necessarily want. So why not cash them out? And then perhaps invest them in other things. Or, you know, sometimes these estates end up in tax trouble and you see these kinds of sales and auctions going on so that they can use the cash to pay toward whatever back taxes the artist may have owned.
All right. Oh, so dear. What do you think about this? That Whitney Houston's Emmy up for sale. Should the Television Academy get it? Should the estate get it? Or maybe you'd like to bid on it. I don't know. But let us know your thoughts and feelings by sending a tweet to Shauna Renee. She is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. And we look forward to hearing from you. You can also log on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Now.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com, and online on Facebook and Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The signing of the Paris Climate Change Agreement on April 22nd was a crucial step in the global effort to meet head-on one of the defining challenges of our time. Among other provisions, the agreement establishes a global framework to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and sets a goal of holding the increase in the global average temperature to well below 2 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial levels and to pursue efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial levels. The Paris Agreement was a critical milestone, said Secretary of State John Kerry at a recent visit to Oslo, Norway. But everybody knows that what we did in Paris does not guarantee a cap on a 2 degree centigrade rise in temperature. What does help reduce levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and therefore helps lower temperatures, are forests. Trees trap carbon dioxide and store it as they grow. But when they die, whether by logging or burning, they release the gas back into the atmosphere. That is why the United States and Norway signed an agreement to work together to help slow climate change through forest protection. Thus, the two countries pledged to, for example, strengthen their efforts to fight illegal logging. The more that governments like ours can do to reinforce the commitments that we made in Paris, the more we will amplify the message that was sent to all sectors of the globe, said Secretary of State Kerry.
Together, with the help of partners around the world, we will better preserve the landscapes that provide not only food, fuel, the fibers that our communities need, but also the climate mitigation and resilience benefits that are absolutely critical to our future.
What we are doing here is helping to keep faith with Paris. It's helping to keep faith with common sense. And it's helping to keep faith with the best hopes and aspirations of people in our countries, said Secretary of State Kerry. I pledge the strongest possible support of the United States of America for actions that will safeguard our health and safeguard our planet for generations to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.